Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is here once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Now, Israel, the first place we're going to go to. And there is mandatory military service there. So people are marching because they want to get rid of the mandatory part. Is that the problem?
Yeah, well, there's mandatory military service for everybody except the people that there's not mandatory military service for.
Yes, conservative.
So it's a very general term because there's lots of different strands, but it's for basically for ultra-Orthodox Jews. Okay, I think also Arab Israelis are exempt from it as well. That's for an entirely different reason. So, bit of background. In 1948, when the state was established, basically the prime minister at the time was Ben-Gurion. He came up with the idea that the certain small group of ultra-Orthodox Jews would be exempt from military service because basically they were studying holy books. And basically he wanted to protect their learning. And he figured, well, there's only about 400 of them at the time, so they're really small. Nobody would be particularly annoyed about it. However, since then, two things have happened, right? The ultra-Orthodox population has grown significantly, right? So there's about 1.3 million of them now in Israel. They make up about 13% of the population. And also they've been involved in a war that has used up an awful lot of their human resources, shall we say. And this exemption, therefore, was being looked at by some within Israel as kind of, well, they're not fighting. Why do we have to go and fight? Yeah. And these guys just sit at home and effectively they're in their fairly tight-knit communities and they're studying religious books. Many of them don't even work. So they're saying, right, you know, why aren't they contributing? So that law, I believe it actually lapsed earlier this year, right? And in June of 2024, the Supreme Court ruled that because the law had lapsed, that the state must draft in these ultra-Orthodox men. And as a result, and because of pressure, loopholes that were there before began to be examined more closely, right? And some ultra-Orthodox men were being drafted in and more pressure was coming on them, right? But the problem that Benjamin Netanyahu has is that some of his rainbow coalition, for want of a better way of putting it, is made up of ultra-Orthodox Jews, and many of their voters would not like to see this particular situation change. So two of the parties, the United Torah Judaism Party and the Shaz Party, they called on people to come out and protest last Thursday, and a couple of 100,000 turned up, I believe. And it all got fairly tense.
These people were protesting the fact that there was the possibility of Orthodox Jews being conscripted into the army.
It's that, but it's slightly nuanced in that for the last 5 or 6 years, Netanyahu and other people have been promising that they would top up that legislation that lapsed the other day, right? They would resolve the problem, but they put it on the long finger. And the Supreme Court is now, as Supreme Courts do very well, and that's the whole point of them, is they're turning it back saying to the government and they're saying, you have not handled this situation. This has now lapsed. You need to deal with it. And they have been trying to, but it hasn't come to pass yet. And that's very tricky for Netanyahu because he depends on, you know, these parties. Well, the United Torah Judaism Party actually quit the coalition in July. The Shaz, who have 11 seats, I think, they're threatening to not look, well, they've left government, but they're threatening not to support the coalition anymore. So his majority is on a knife edge. I think it's 60 seats out of 120. So if they leave, I mean, the next thing you're looking at is an election, obviously.
Yeah. And would there be a lot of resistance to having this law renewed?
Amongst this cohort, there would be, but in the general scheme of things in Israel, not at all. Yeah. No, it's a highly unpopular law in Israel in general.
Okay,
as
right.
you can imagine.
Yes, okay. So there would be resistance to renewing the law and giving the exemptions to Orthodox Jews.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the problem Netanyahu has that in his own Likud party, they're sort of saying to him, well, look, this is unfair. We can't go with this.
Mm.
But he needs those two parties to stay out of jail, effectively. Yeah. You know?
And one could say that perhaps those two parties and on the Orthodox Judaism end of things were the most supportive of wars and expansion into the West Bank,
but as long as
other people do the fighting.
That is a tricky one because, as you know, it's really nuanced. There's some ultra-Orthodox Jews who are entirely against Zionism. There's others who support it. There's others who live in Israel but don't support it. It's a minefield of stuff.
Yeah. Right, Australia we're going to go to where, for the first time in how many centuries, the state of Victoria has actually passed a treaty with Native Australian peoples.
Yeah, it's the first formal treaty with Indigenous people, in Australia, right? So they've done this as a state, okay? So just a bit of context, the Aboriginal population in Victoria is about 66,000, so it only makes up about 3% of the population in Victoria. Now, that's as opposed to, let's say, the Northern Territory, up in the north, obviously, where it makes up about 27% of the population. Just for a bit of context, people can read into that what they want. So Victoria's been working on this legislation for the guts of 10 years. They've had a Labour government there for the last 10 years, right? And now they've passed it, again, last Thursday. It's called the Statewide Treaty Bill. It was passed by 21 votes to 16. And it establishes a thing called the Gelung Warl, right? Which is a kind of means treaty. And that in itself is made up of three things, right? So it's a first, and the most important part of it is it's going to establish a permanent representative body called the First People's Assembly. Okay?
Okay.
This is actually a democratically elected body, okay, amongst Aboriginals in Victoria and Torres Strait Islanders, right? And it's actually been in place since about 2019, but now they've obviously said, okay, well, that went relatively well, even though the turnout for these elections was really, really small. You wouldn't believe how bad it was. They've said it went relatively well, so we're going to make this permanent. And so that's been brought into law.
Okay, and the Aboriginal representative body, does it have any teeth? Or is it, lads, you're over there? So,
yeah, there's a bit of that. I mean, it is allowed to make representations. It provides advice to the government. I think the biggest one is that it's allowed to question ministers and that ministers have to go to them first and various departments have to go to them first if they're to, you know, talk about anything to do with First Peoples in it. But crucially, and this goes to the heart of your question, they do not have veto powers.
Yeah, okay.
So that will depend on who's in government in Victoria, how long it lasts for, and how much teeth it will have.
Yeah. Right, Russia we're going to go to next. As we know, freedom of speech there isn't in the healthiest state, which includes busking.
It does, yeah. I shouldn't be laughing. This poor young lady, Diana Loginova, is the lead singer of a band called Stop Time. I don't know if you're a fan at all, but they're relatively big amongst young people in St. Petersburg. And herself and her bandmates, a drummer and a guitarist, were out busking effectively one day on October the 13th, and it landed them in jail. Obviously, the content of what they're singing about, which is kind of anti-Putin stuff and anti-Ukraine special, what do they call it? Special maneuvers?
Special military operation.
Military operation, sorry. Special military operation. They weren't too happy about that, so they arrested her. And she was sent and detained for administrative detention for 13 days. She got out after the 13 days and found herself in court the following day because apparently the district court didn't like some of the lyrics in her songs. They said that one of her songs contained an expletive, so they sent her back to jail for another 13 days. Now, in solidarity with her, buskers right across Russia, well, mainly in Moscow and St. Petersburg, have been going out and have been singing for her and for her release. So I suppose I'm including this story to show that there are people in Russia who are trying to do something. We don't hear that much about them. They're often small, you know, I just thought it was worth mentioning.
Yeah, it is. Indeed, they are small and they're often in jail and they often fall out windows. Right, Tanzania we're going to go to next. Hundreds of people have been killed there over elections.
Yeah, so this is an election which took place last Wednesday, right? So the president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, who came to power in October 2021, that was after our old friend John Magufuli died,
yeah.
Apparently of heart problems, but the opposition have always maintained it was COVID. She was involved in this election. Effectively, what happened was she had banned two of the main opposition parties from running, so she won one of those victories that you usually only see over in the stands. You know, 90% voted her in, and she was sworn in there on Monday. But the rioting and the protests kicked off on Wednesday, and pretty much straight away on the day of the elections, and that's because that the opposition were left out. Now, the opposition are saying that at least 700 people have been killed as a result of this.
Yeah.
However, it hasn't been independently verified at this stage because the internet has been down since Wednesday. It was cut off on Wednesday, and they brought it back up yesterday, just in time for her inauguration. So it can't be independently verified at this stage. However, there were election observers from a Southern Africa regional bloc there called the SADC, and they basically said that voters could not express their democratic will, and they highlighted the restrictions on the opposition, and there was suspicions of ballot stuffing as well. So I think it's fairly safe to assume that the elections, first off, were not done fairly, and it's also safe to assume that those numbers, okay, they might be a bit bloated, but there was a significant crackdown on protesters, but we might never know.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd wonder in the region with neighbouring countries, with the African Union, you know, take some action on the basis of that.
We'll just have to wait and see. It's hard to know whether they will take action. Certainly, a lot of organisations outside, including the United Nations and Human Rights Watch, have condemned her tenure in the last 3 or 4 years. There was hope when she came to power because she did allow opposition to you know, exist, I suppose, in the first few months and maybe the first year of her tenure. But since then, she's gone the way of her predecessor.
Right. Brazil, we're going to go to finally. Unfortunately, more people killed, though this is as a result of a crackdown on gangs.
Yeah. So you remember the Olympics when they had the World Cup when they had it in Brazil. They went into the favelas in Rio de Janeiro and there was huge crackdowns on that. This was something that was, according to the Rio state governor, a man by the name of Claudio Castro, this was something, an operation that had been planned for 2 months. Okay, apparently there's an organization within part of the favelas called the Red Command. They're a gang in there, and they had been fighting to get back territory that they had lost previously from another gang. So Claudio Castro, who's a central figure in this particular story, the governor of the state, he said that, you know, this was well planned and they knew who they were targeting. But the result of this is 132 people dead so far, right? And those figures were issued by the Public Defender's Office. So these are people who, you know, give legal assistance to the poor, but they're kind of a state body. Now, in his reaction to this, he said, well, we're not 100% sure what the figure is. Officially, it's still 58, which I don't think would go down very well with those who are, you know, have lost loved ones in these killings, and an awful lot of his attitude seems to be very blasé towards this. Lula has responded by saying he was shocked, and he was also surprised that he wasn't given notification that this was going to happen. So it's an interesting one, and it is kind of unprecedented in the level of death that has occurred here in this situation.
Yeah, but this is kind of almost like warfare. They're going into very kind of tightly packed areas. And so it's almost inevitable that innocent people will be hurt.
Yes, you can absolutely. I mean, there's nothing else to say about it. I mean, the people that described it said that it was like a war, and the police even reported that some of the gangs were using drones and dropping explosives on police. Four police were killed as well. And now the governor himself has basically said that most of this happened in the woods surrounding, or the forests surrounding, the favelas. So hard to know exactly, you know, how much of it was street fighting, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But the result is again another I often wonder, you know, if there's lots of Brazilians here, I wonder if do they hate hearing these stories about their country, you know?
Yeah, indeed. Right, so what should we look out for over the next week or so?
The big news today has to be that mayoral election in New York between Mamdani and Andrew Cuomo appear to be the two main runners. Mm. There was talk that apparently Cuomo was making a bit of a comeback there in the polls.
Well, hasn't Trump backed him and made some sort of vague threat if Mamdani wins?
That's something that he's going to withhold funding from New York. And he said, don't bother voting for the Republican candidate. He's going to lose. So that'll be interesting to see, if it's even tight. I don't know. But anyway, the results of that should be tonight. And then on Friday, speaking of Trump, Orban is visiting the White House. You were talking about him earlier on, I heard. And then on Saturday, the new Bolivian president, Rodrigo Paz, will be sworn in. And he has said that basically the age of socialism in Bolivia is over. So it'll be interesting to see what he does.
Okay, you can look forward to lots of protests there. Jonathan, thanks a million. Sure. As ever, Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.